Former Alaska Senator Click Bishop is one of many candidates running for governor. Bishop visited Wrangell earlier this month and stopped by KSDK for an interview with Sentinel reporter Jonathan Daw and myself, KSDK General Manager Cindy Sweat. Jonathan Daw starts off the conversation.
We're here with Click Bishop, candidate for governor. And if you would, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, thank you for the invitation today. And it's good to be back in Wrangell and the sun shining. So that's a bonus. It's my wife's first time to Wrangell, and just a little bit about myself. You know, I'll be 69 years old here come July 25th, and came to Alaska when I was 18 months old with my dad in construction business, and he worked for Green Construction Company, and we worked all over Southeast and the interior and points in between all the way to Point Barrow. So I grew up with my wife. We met when we were 18 in the same construction camp. 18 months old.
Wow.
And we just celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary last Friday. So a lot of good memories of Wrangell. I won't give you the whole spiel, but we lived here in 68. Dad did the road from the mill into town and a bunch of city streets, and then did the initial clearing for the runway. They didn't do the hard surface. That was another contract. So bounced all over the state doing construction as an adult, covered a lot of the same territory. And then my last job was in 1991 on the Adigan Pass reroute. We replaced 9 miles of pipe, 48-inch pipe through Adigan Pass. And so Lathrop High School graduate. You know, I've been to school from Ketchikan to Northway and all these communities my dad worked in construction. So got a great cross section of the state, excellent cross section of the state. And so I ran, was fortunate to run my, the apprenticeship and training program for the Alaska Operating Engineers Training Trust, did that for almost 20 years. And then, Governor Palin was elected in 2006, and was a voice recording on our phone at home then, right? Didn't have BlackBerries or cell phone, these types of phones that we have today, and asked me to go to work for her. So after a couple of visits, I left the best job that I had in my life, training the next generation of skilled labor for Alaska's workforce, and that's running the apprenticeship and training program. And actually had some apprentice from Wrangell that went through the program here. And so anyway, did 6 years as commissioner, 12 years in the Senate, and had been asked to run for governor by people. You know, everybody's got their own fan club, right? Obviously, there's 17 people running today, I think. And the hardest decision I ever had to make was to leave my Senate district, Senate District R, which is the largest Senate district in the country. If it was a state, it would be the third largest state in the nation. And a lot of family in that district, my wife's side of the street, and a lot of good friends. And it was, I knew it inside and out like the back of my hand. And so here we are. We took the plunge and retired from the Senate to devote the time and effort to run for governor.
If someone were just to ask you outright while mm-hmm. you're here in Wrangell with mm-hmm. such a broad field of candidates, why should I select you for governor?
Well, I alluded to that a little bit earlier. I'm not really good at ringing my own bell. I never was raised that way. I got zero hubris in my body, right? And my grandmother always said, if you're doing your job, somebody else will ring your bell for you. And so, but I will say this, I don't believe there's a candidate out there that has the cross section geographically working around the state, knowing as many people as I know in the state, right? And that was one of the criticisms I used to get from my staff in Juneau, because, you know, I sit on the Senate Finance Committee for 12 years, the Resource Committee, Labor and Commerce, et cetera, et cetera. And you're busy, right? And especially when you're a chair. And my staff would say, "Boss, you're taking too many meetings." And I said, "Listen, somebody spends $900 on an airplane ticket to come to Juneau, plus room and board. We're going to shoehorn them in our schedule somewhere, because I know a lot of people, and we're going to, and we're everybody's senator." Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a senator for District R, but I represent the whole state as well.
One of the things that has been kind of a hot potato issue in conversations around here, because our school superintendent, Josh Garrett, has actually stated for the record that he believes the funding formula for public schools is broken. Mm-hmm. He thinks the base allocation, base student allocation, is not a good formula. Based on your experience within the Senate and just being in the state as long as you have, what have you seen about it that you think should change, could change, or do you have any fresh ideas of what you think would overhaul it?
So I'll just riff on education for a second. Personally, I don't think education's failing. Can we do better? Absolutely. And teachers aren't the problem. But are there bad teachers? Sure. Are there bad operating engineers? Sure. Right? There's somebody that's not hitting the marks in every discipline. But by and large, when I graduated from Lathrop High School in 1974, the headline in the paper was that public education system is failing in Alaska. Right? And I think it's a talking point. But yet Lathrop High School 2 years ago scored number one in the nation on mathematics of school sizes across the nation. Right. So you can always do better. But I also believe that $347 million of deferred maintenance is not a good thing, because you're having to rob Peter to pay Paul, meaning taking some of your, depending upon the district, taking BSA formula funds to plug the worst of the worst for your repairs. That's not a good recipe for success. I will tell you that the BSA formula, does it need to be changed? I've had people tell me that it does. Yeah, we've heard that in the Senate, and there you go. That's that, you know, to do anything in Juneau, you need 21 and 11 plus one to get anything done. And the last time they redid the formula, it took them 5 years, right? For the short term, I've got a group of people, a high and tight group, that we're looking at the formula now, amongst other things, to improve outcomes in education. But I'm not ready specifically to go prime time with that. What do I want to do? I want to increase the BSA formula for career and tech ed funding my first year out of the gate. And I think that's something you can get right over the top. And because people say, "How are you going to pay for it?" Well, this is how I want to pay for it. In your revenue sources book that every lawmaker gets every year from the Department of Revenue, there's a small line in there. It's a couple of sentences. It's a public school trust fund. Inside that public school trust fund is about less than $1 billion. And how does it derive it? Money. It's money. It's a 0.5%, 0.5%, 0.5% off of minerals, rents, and royalties off our oil and gas, timber, mining, et cetera, funds, that public school trust fund. I want to up that public school trust fund multiplier. And what that number is yet, I don't know. But when we get to Juneau on December the 7th, we're going to start working on that, working with our administration, lawmakers, et cetera, to get a number that we can agree on to increase the funding in the BSA for career and tech ed. So this shop that's behind me right over here at the high school, doesn't have to pinch pennies to buy wire, consumable aluminum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for their programs. And I want some wins right now, and that's a win for education that can that is tangible, that will have tangible results, especially if you build, if this, I think you guys have got a what, $24 million plus grant package out right now for to expand the where the old mill was to for shipbuilding, et cetera, et cetera. Where are you going to get the skilled labor? Homegrown's the best.
I think one of the reasons why it's such a hot potato, in particular this year, is the number of school districts in Alaska that have had to close buildings, mm-hmm. had to lay off teachers. Mm-hmm. Ketchikan is really up against it. And even though now Wrangell has fared pretty well, and I know that our school board and superintendent are very pleased with what they've been able to accomplish, but for the last couple of years they've had to pull out of their reserve fund, mm-hmm. and you know they're happy that they have some runway, but if things continue on the course that they've been going, they're going to end up with an empty reserve fund, right. You know, in a couple of years.
Well, I'll say this: Click Bishop has voted for yes on every funding increase for education. He's voted to override the administration on their veto fund of public education. And I forgot to mention that my wife's a 25-year kindergarten teacher, with the exception of 1 year. She taught, I think, a sixth grade class. There will be another champion in the governor's mansion for education.
What are your thoughts on access to fisheries for all Alaskans and the sustainability of fisheries into the future?
So let me just set the stage for that question. So the four planks in our platform is cheap energy, the economy, education, and fisheries. I spend 60% of my time on the last one, fisheries. And it's important. They're all important, but fisheries, I was just I had an hour and a half conversation 2 days ago in Anchorage on fisheries, and I support all fisheries. I do. I mean, my wife, her family hails from the Yukon River. We use fish wheels and fish nets, and her folks were processors. I miss not being able to teach my grandsons how to build a fish wheel, right? We're on a 7-year moratorium on Chinook right now. There is some good news, you know, the fishing game's predicting a pretty good return, right? And that's a good thing. And our summer chum run looks strong enough that we're going to probably get a summer subsistence chum run season for eating fish, you know, for personal use. So I was in Dutch Harbor a week ago, candidate forum, and, you know, there's... It'd take me an hour to walk you through this, but this radio interview, it's not... It's just not one. You can't blame one segment of the industry as the culprit for the decline. You got to talk about ocean warming. And now we're coming back into another, what they think is another super El Nino, right? And we know what happens with that, because these cocoa pods that'll be coming up in this marine heat wave have less nutrients in them, and you can scientifically prove, looking at scale samples, where those fish are stressed, because they're not, the cocoa pods do not have the nutrients in them that they need to grow. And you can read that through a scale sample. You know, I've been traveling this state. Darlene and I have been on every trip together, with the exception of one trip, and we started in Kodiak in September and around the state. And the fish issue, subsistence, commercial, sport, you name it, is different in every community. Now, when you got a salmon steak or a halibut steak or a moose steak in every skillet, everybody's happy. But when you got restrictions, less fish, etc., and game, our ungulate population is suffering in the interior, because the first thing I'm going to do is have an administrative order to create a standalone commissioner of fish and a standalone commissioner of game. You got two boards. You got a game board, you got a fish board. And it's a big enough issue. You need two standalone commissioners. And I've got a lot of support for that around the state. But now we've talked about El Nino. We haven't talked about in river, Yukon River, Kuskokwim River water temperatures. I have 30 years of data on that. We haven't talked about 30% mortality on summer chums going up the Yukon that have not made the spawning grounds, right? We haven't talked about the warming of the Arctic, and these rivers now are running different colors, right? Because the permafrost is thawing. So there's a whole bunch to this issue. But the good news is today for us, and we learned this Saturday, is we look like we're going to have a pretty decent king return and a good enough return on summer chum between 500 and a million fish that we're going to get to have some fish in the smokehouse. So that's a good thing. But I want to appoint people to the Board of Fish that it's fair and balanced. And I'm a big believer in the science, and I'm a big believer in the traditional knowledge. Local knowledge. Also, and the department needs to have funding increased for the science. So I'll just stop there because I can go on and on.
So I wanted to shift gears a bit and ask you a question about mm-hmm. healthcare. So access to quality healthcare is important to all of us. And it's tricky to provide a range of services in the rural communities, and costs are also really high in the rural communities. So what can the state do to support access and affordability of health care for all Alaskans?
That's a good question. And that's not even, medicine costs too much. We all know that, right? I'm not the expert in that area, but I'll tell you this on cost. When I first was a commissioner, at the first cabinet meeting, our OMB director said, it's $600 million GF this year, general fund dollars, to match federal funds. Now it's the budget's over $1 billion GF spend. So, but the good thing is, the reason I've been so successful in my life is I've always hired up. And I know we're like four of what I think are the smartest people in the state on this issue. And they're going to help me with the health care policy. And I'm not ready to talk about it yet. But you're right on. I mean, you know, what are we going to do here in four more years when this $1.2 billion is gone, right, on this health care transformation? So I've got some good folks working with me on this, and I'm not going to name drop on the radio, but if I did, you would know exactly who they were, and you'd be smiling.
One of the questions that I have is, obviously, you're aware of the potentially enormous changes that could be coming here with JAG and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that has brought up some local questions about housing. Now, we mm-hmm. hear a lot about affordable housing crisis
yep.
throughout Alaska.
Yep.
But then also looking at smaller communities like this, you know, where it's a little bit more difficult in some ways to increase the housing. What do you see the state being able to do to help address that?
I think, well, one of the things that I did when I was still at the Senate Finance table and co-chair of Finance is we put some more money into AHFC's budget, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. You got a good guy over there running that, Brian Butcher, and he's got a great team around him. And if I was elected, I wouldn't look to be changing anybody out over there. I don't know what it cost a square foot to build in Wrangell yet. I know what it cost in Nome 3 years ago was $800 a square foot. But I'm going to find out. It's my understanding, wasn't where the old, the Wrangell Institute was, yeah, was
Alder
that?
Top.
Alder Top. Now that's been, that, isn't that housing now?
Yeah, those are lots that the city sold.
So nothing's built there yet?
Not yet.
But at least you, the good thing is, I don't know how many lots it is, but I get your paper, so I read it as much as I can. You know what I mean? So I've been getting it ever since I was in the Senate. But I was familiar with that project. I sped read it, you know. I read about 5 or 6 newspapers a day, try to. But that the good thing is you got land here.
Yeah.
That and you've got a place to go. With the construction, so that's a bonus. But it's a good question. I mean, I'm going to see what it costs to build here, but I don't have a definitive magic wand to wave over that at this point. But I know land is a big one, and you've got one leg up on having property.
Just sort of a general energy question. Here in Southeast, we have a lot of rain, so we have this great hydro. And I don't know if you knew, but Wrangell is planning to put in a solar farm out there across from the 6 Mile Mill.
I read that.
Yeah. So I just want to get your general thoughts on energy resources for the state of Alaska. Just what are your thoughts on energy?
Now you're hitting my wheelhouse.
Okay.
Can I ask you, Cindy, what do you pay residential rate at your house?
I don't know.
You
I can tell you what my bill is, but I can't tell you my rate.
You just answered my question.
Okay.
It's so damn cheap, you don't care.
Well, okay.
Because you're on hydro. And I'm I had a 4x8 whiteboard in my office in Juneau. I want to go back to 1984. The legislature passed the Susitna legislation for Susitna Dam to go forward. And 1985, the price of oil fell, and they didn't know how they were going to fund it, et cetera, et cetera. And so that 50-man camp that was there, I was one of a dozen men that hauled that camp from there to Bradley Lake. Because what stayed in that 1984 legislation was Terra Lake, Kodiak, Hydro, your Southeast 4-dam pool money, right? I want the rail belt to be just like like Southeast. We want to be on Hydro. And I want to go back and take a look at Susitna again We authorized $100 million in the Parnell administration. Walker came in, price of oil went down. He did what he did and stopped that project. And if we had not have stopped it in 1984 or not stopped it today in 2018, and if the dam was running, your electrical rates off the dam face would be a nickel a kilowatt hour less distribution. And that's the other beauty part of your Southeast Intertie down here is under SEPA. You got so much room in that line for expansion, right? So Interior, Bradley Lake, you know, stayed in the mix. That's the cheapest power on the rail belt. It's a nickel a kilowatt, less distribution. So we've got finished. There's one more section of that intertie that needs to be upgraded so we'll have redundancy and we can take the excess power, right? We'll be able to move the excess power with redundancy. And you want to grow the economy as cheap electricity. Notwithstanding a gas line, I've worked on 5 gas line projects in my tenure as in the private sector and in state government. Hydro is a gift that keeps on giving. It doesn't care if there's a war going on in the Middle East. It's still a nickel a kilowatt off the dam face. At Bradley Lake, I think, to be exact, is 4.5 cents a kilowatt. Cheap power will grow the economy in ways you don't even can't even comprehend. I know all these fish processors, especially businesses in the interior, on the rail belt, would love to have their power bill cut in half, and that's the goal. And we'll click, what's it cost today for that dam? Well, it was $5.5 billion, and when we pulled the plug on the FERC licensing in, 2016, I think that was the year, it was $5.5 billion, right, for a 600 megawatt dam. And today, because the administration, the federal administration, the Trump administration, recognizes hydro as a renewable, they will pay for 50% of that dam with grant money. If you get working towards construction by 2036, I believe is the year. And so that whiteboard in my office was a 4x8 whiteboard. And it had, at the top of the board, it says, at that time, it was 10 years of out-migration of the best and the brightest is leaving the state, right? And we got to turn that demographic around, because my demographic is the fastest growing demographic in the state, right? And yeah, we're great people, and we got good pensions, and we contribute, but at some point, we're going to need, we can age in place, right, in home. But getting back to your point, we're going to need more people in the healthcare world. A couple things on energy, just to make my point on what cheap hydro will do for you as a state. Two things. So I've been to Iceland twice, once on business and once for a wedding. And they bring raw bauxite from Chile all the way to Reykjavik, and they refine it. And you're going, how in the hell can they do that? Well, their commercial power rate is 1.5 cents a kilowatt hour. That's how they do it. And you think, oh, click, it's all geothermal. They got 78% hydro, 22% geothermal. So I'm in Idaho Falls because I'm a nuke fan too, right? I like nuclear power. I'm not scared of it, especially with the advent of these new small modular reactors that are plug and play. And they are test driving the first one in Idaho Falls, Idaho. So I've toured the NREL, the National, I forgot the full name of the acronym. Yeah, it's where all the new, anything that has to do with nuclear, mm-hmm. that's where it gets certified. It's out in the high desert outside of Idaho Falls. So we came back, did the tour, came back, and the professor says, does anybody have any questions? And I said, yes, I have one question. And I asked him the same question I asked you. I said, what is your meter rate at your home for electricity, residential rate? He says, I can't answer the question. And I said, you just did. It's so damn cheap, you don't care. 5 minutes later, he gets a note handed to him from a staff, 6 cents a kilowatt hour in Idaho Falls. It's old hydro, okay? And Idaho's, do your own research. Idaho's one of the fastest growing states in the West. Cheap power. Good education.
I want to thank you so much for stopping by and having a visit with us, and welcome to Wrangell.
This is public radio, right?
It is.
Click Bishop never voted to cut public broadcasting any time of his career in the Senate. We grew up on public radio in the bush, so.